All of our patrons will automatically qualify for our exclusive prize draw. At the end of the season, 8 of them will be randomly selected and written into one of the thrilling chapters of season 5. To enter, click the link in our description and sign up as a patron today.
Things change over time. We know this to be true in every chapter of life. In relationships, whether they be romantic or platonic, you will inevitably, on occasions, find that you begin to head down different paths, no longer finding yourselves as compatible as you once were. That's part of life, as we sometimes outgrow each other. However, there are times when the change comes with the realization that the other is not the person we initially thought them to be. Every person has it in them to lash out once their boiling point is hit. Everyone can act out of character and do strange things that surprise those around them. We've all said and done things we later regret. But what if there was more to it than that? What would you do if you genuinely believed that the individual in front of you was not the person you once thought them to be, but an imposter that had taken their place? My name is Luke Mordew, and this urban legend is Changelings. A brood parasite is a term used by science to describe a particular, often perceived as cruel, action used by certain species of birds, fish, and insects. The act is fascinating, as the brood parasite will manipulate a recent parent into raising the parasite's young as if it was their own, whether it be the same species or an entirely different one. They do this through brood mimicry, with one typical example being planting an egg in an unsuspecting animal's nest, one that closely resembles those already laid. They do this often to relieve themselves of any parental burden they would be undertaking as a parent, while still ensuring that they can successfully procreate. Within the world of birds, the risk of damage to the eggs is mitigated by the sheer amount of eggs they distribute across several nests, often resulting in an evolutionary arms race between coexisting species, as the parasitic birds are often damaging to their victims' livelihoods. Usually, the invading species hatch first, growing more significant than its supposed siblings, hogging most of the nourishment their fooled parents may provide. On some occasions, these parasites have even been documented as going further, as they actively push the legitimate young out of the nest entirely. A child being replaced by another is a haunting, horrifying notion. Yet, as we've just found, it is not an unheard of occurrence in several places around the world within the animal kingdom. But then we must also wonder, if it is possible to happen amongst them, could it also happen among us? In my telling of a story involving an encounter with a changeling, we will follow Agatha and her newborn baby, Lily, enjoying a rest in their little house out in the countryside. The moon was high in the sky, proudly gleaming down onto the treetops that stood tall in the darkness of the night. The clouds were scarce and thin, gently passing over like a mist on the Earth's atmosphere. Agatha was fast asleep on the sofa, still fully dressed and gripping a novel she had been struggling to finish. She was experiencing exhaustion that only a new mother could understand. It was worth it to her, although she still longed for the days when baby Lily would sleep through the night. The foxes outside shrieked as the owls swooped overhead, yet neither mother nor daughter stirred as the house sat in peaceful silence. That was until a sharp thud echoed through the house with sudden force, followed by the instantaneous horrified screams of Lily upstairs. Agatha instantly shot up, ready to act, before she had even registered what was going on. She didn't think, immediately darting up the stairs and into the hallway leading to her bedroom, where her crying baby was screaming for her. She scooped Lily into her arms and gently shushed her, bouncing up and down to create a comforting motion. Lily had woken up screaming many times before, but never like this. It was not a scream of sadness or anger. It was almost as if it was full of horror, a screech rather than a cry. Agatha gathered her bearings for a moment as she attempted to calm the baby, looking around the room to find what had fallen to make such a loud thud, waking them both with such discomfort. Only then did she notice that the netted curtains draped over the window were slightly swaying in the breeze. She walked towards it, feeling the air grow colder as she approached closer. The window was wide open. She pulled back the netting and looked into the darkness, still gripping her baby tightly against her chest. She wouldn't have opened this window. It was still far too cold for that, let alone with a sleeping baby inside. So how on earth did it get opened? Could this have been what had banged? She watched the darkness of the trees, studying them as they danced amongst the nightly breeze in the moonlight. Although, there was no sign of any disturbance. She closed the window and pulled the latch to a lock before stepping away as Lily finally settled down. Agatha whispered reassuring words into the baby's ear before kissing her little head and placing her back into the cot. "I'll be right back," she whispered before turning to walk out of the room. But Lily again began to cry, with that horrified and blood-curdling scream the moment Agatha reached the doorway. She turned back, returning to the cot with concern, studying her baby with curiosity and confusion. When the moon gave up its grip of the night, making room for the sun to shine again, Agatha was still very much awake. She was now sitting on the armchair in the living room, holding baby Lily in her arms, still squirming and whining with irritation. There had been at least half an hour of respite where Agatha could get some sleep, but that was not enough to get her through the day, which she was now dreading to her core. Hours had passed, and Agatha was now sitting at a kitchen table. She had her second cup of coffee in her left hand, whilst her right hovered over the keypad of her laptop, hoping for the words to come that she could continue with her work, although she knew in her heart that this was a losing battle. She was in a zombie-like state, and Lily had still not stopped crying. She couldn't understand how she was not yet tired, how she could still scream and shout with such force when she had had such little sleep. Before now, she was pretty good with her sleep, waking up at night, but in an expected manner. She wasn't hungry. Agatha had fed her several times, and she didn't seem to be in any physical pain that Agatha could find. The only way that Agatha could seemingly describe these screams in her mind was with rage. Lily seemed irritable and angry, angrier than any baby should be, as if she was furious that she was here and stuck in our world. Agatha felt terrible for doing so, but by now, she had begun to drown out the screaming from behind, allowing Lily to screech at the world until her heart's content. However, with every second that passed, the frustration was growing inside of Agatha, as if the rage Lily was feeling had become infectious, an emotion that Agatha felt an incredible amount of guilt for feeling. She finally decided she'd had enough as she clicked off her work and opened her internet browser, searching for answers on why her baby won't stop screaming and what she could do to remedy the problem. She scrolled through endless links and pages, giving information and tips that counteracted and disagreed with each other, filled with anecdotes and opinions. In many ways, this made it worse. She felt overwhelmed and overstimulated, until eventually, she came across something that gave her pause. It was the header of a forum written by an anonymous contributor a few years prior, with the words, "This is not my baby," written in all caps. She couldn't explain what it was, but something about this headline compelled her to look closer, drawing her in as if it resonated with some locked away part of her psyche. She clicked the link and began reading the stories parents had written, all desperately pleading for help to get their children back. They would explain that their babies had been stolen in the night by horrifying fairies and replaced with an imposter, referred to by many as changelings. Agatha bathed her baby as the sun began to reset. She smiled as she poured the water gently over Lily's tiny, chubby little arms, talking to her in a playful voice. Lily had finally calmed down, now enjoying the attention she was receiving as she rested in the lukewarm water, bringing Agatha great relief. However, she still couldn't shake something deep inside of her. Something about the story she had read earlier connected with a thought she didn't know she had. She told herself she was just tired and that it was a ridiculous concept. Although, she knew deep in her heart that something had, in fact, changed within her little girl. She could see it in her big blue eyes that stared up at her. She could see that something wasn't right. Agatha picked Lily up, holding her gently in her arms, studying her innocent face that looked back at her with curiosity. She smiled and kissed her on the forehead before asking, in a half-joking manner, "You're still my little girl, right?" On this night, Agatha would be allowed to sleep for an hour before Lily started up again, now crying and screeching as she had done the night before. Agatha tried to calm and rest her, but once again nothing seemed to work. No amount of singing could stop her cries. And when she attempted to feed her, Lily would do nothing but bite and chew with all of her might, causing nothing but pain and discomfort. In many ways, Agatha no longer felt human herself, completely drained of any coherent thought. She didn't know how long had passed. Reality was now a blur. She only knew that the moon had slid across the sky since she had been reawakened. She was lying on her bed, her hand gently resting on the baby beside her asleep, but still stirring. Agatha's eyes were sunken, her face pale, her breasts were bruised, her joints ached, and her stomach hurt as if the mechanics had forgotten how to work. She had been beaten by the recent events and had nothing left inside of her to give. So she just laid there and began to cry. She cried as she thought about the disconnect she felt towards her baby, feeding the hatred she felt for herself for losing that bond so early on in their new life together. She contemplated on how she would cope if this continued for years to come. She questioned if she was ever fit to be a mother to begin with. But then, something else came into her mind. Once more, she considered the tale she had read earlier that day. All those stories told by those who experienced changelings in their paths. She wondered if they could be true. If this baby in front of her could, in fact, be an imposter. If this was to be the case, she knew what she had to do to get her true baby back. But she knew she did not have the heart to do it. They all said the same thing. If you want your baby back, you must hurt its mimic or leave it out to die. They stated that before long, the fairies would return the true baby and take the changeling away. This was too dark, too risky, and too horrifying for her even to consider, or so she thought. And yet there she was, staring down at her baby, contemplating what else she could do to bring her back. If she was wrong, she could kill her child. If she was right, she could save her. She contemplated what she would do if she tried nothing, If she raised this creature as her own, allowing her real child to be raised by her terrifying kidnappers, to perhaps even become a being of the forests herself. Agatha had to try at least, or she would never forgive herself. She could live her entire life wondering and hoping. She had to make them give her back. Agatha didn't know why she was doing what she was doing when she carried the baby down the stairs. She couldn't explain why these stories resonated with her so strongly. She couldn't comprehend why she now believed in something that would never have occurred to her a few days before. There was just something about how this baby looked at her that discomforted and confused her sensibilities. When she looked down into Lily's eyes, she did not see her little girl looking back at her. She saw something else entirely. She saw a knowing glint. She unlocked the front door and stepped into her sizable front garden, looking out into the woods that led towards, studying the branches that swayed in the shadow, wondering if they were watching her. Her eyes filled with tears as she laid the baby down onto the cold grass, causing her to wake up, suddenly screaming and crying in shock. Agatha got to her feet, keeping her eyes focused on the screeching baby ahead, the tears streaming down her face as she slowly backed away towards the house. She looked up into the darkness of the trees once more, hoping with all of her might that they could see what she was doing and were willing to do what was right. She stepped back into the front door of her house, still facing out to her screaming baby that was now engulfed by the darkness of the night. "Please bring my baby back," she whispered, before slowly closing the door. She went to her room and lay on her bed, listening to the continued screams of the baby that sat outside. 15 minutes had passed, and the screaming had not stopped. Every cry seemed to shoot through the window's glass, shaking every bone in her body as she desperately tried to hold strong through her distraught tears. She grabbed the pillow beside her and shoved it over her head, pushing down against her ear to muffle the sounds as much as she could, continuously repeating, "Just bring her back." The screaming of the baby continued for a moment longer, before it finally began to subside, not stopping, but quietening. Agatha shot up, listening carefully with a sudden excitement as she paced towards the window. She peered into the darkness to see if she could see the return of her child, but instead, she saw nothing but the outline of the crying baby, growing weaker in the cold air of the night. She would die out there if neither she nor the fairies intervened. She looked out into the woods, mentally pleading for them to come, but there had been no sign of their arrival, no sign that they were coming. As she stood there, playing chicken with the woodland creatures of the dark, she began to realize that whether this was her baby or not, she could not let it die. That just wasn't who she was. Ten years passed, and the house remained very much the same, bar a few more appliances in certain rooms. Agatha stood by the kitchen window, watching two deer, a mother and a child grazing by the edge of the woods nearby. She smiled softly, admiring their beauty as she cut up the sandwich in front of her. She wrapped it up and placed it in a lunchbox before locking it. "Have you got my lunch?" Lily asked as she walked into the kitchen, now nearing 11 years old, standing tall in her school uniform and freshly brushed hair. "Yeah, here," Agatha replied before handing her the lunchbox. Lily took it with a smile before dropping to the floor and shoving it into her backpack. Agatha asked if she needed a lift to school, but she didn't. She would go in with her friends and their big brother. Lily flung her backpack over her shoulder and said goodbye in a sudden hurry, about to scurry off to the front door. But her mum stopped her, simply saying, "Lily." She paused and turned to her mum, watching curiously. Agatha smiled and reassuringly whispered, "I love you." Lily studied her for a moment and smiled back. "I love you too, Mum," she replied before pacing towards her and kissing her on the cheek. She pulled away ever so slightly and stared into her curious mother's eyes, continuing to study her for a moment before turning and leaving the house for school. Agatha remained still in the kitchen, her stomach turning. She had raised a polite, lovely little girl that she was proud of in many ways. But that feeling never truly faded. When she told her daughter she loved her, she did mean it, although she knew in her heart that every time Lily looked her in the eyes, with that knowing glint still present, she did not see her little girl looking back at her. What would come to mind if I asked you to picture a fairy? A little woman in a short dress with butterfly-like wings fluttering out of her back? Or perhaps you would imagine their more fantasy-looking depictions, more bug-like and mystical. When many of us in the modern day hear of fairies, we often think of Tinkerbell and the glowing beauty of the Disney-fied creatures, as is often shown. Today's fairies may vary in shape and size, almost as much as they differ in their abilities and usage of magic, but still, they remain somewhat harmless in many modern tales. Although, throughout history, their existence has been far more curious than these delicate little beings suggest them to be. When it comes to the changeling, it is said to be a creature that is also historically known as an elf or an oaf. And this human-like form of fairy has been found throughout Europe in several forms of folklore over many years. It is said that several traits can help identify a changeling. In Irish legend, a child that is secretly a fairy would possibly appear sickly and small, not growing in size like the others around it. Some even believed that, on occasions, fairy children would have a beard or long teeth. A changeling may also display signs of intelligence that would be considered far beyond their years, and an enormous appetite where they would devour any food put in front of them. And although some of these things seem pretty reasonable in their suspiciousness, such as a baby with a beard, most signs seem to be anything out of the norm, creating a suspect with any sign of below or above average intelligence. That said, others often listed as evidence of a changeling are far harder to comprehend. For example, they say that the best time to see if a child is a changeling is to watch them when they are unaware that they are being observed. It is here they would display unusual behavior such as jumping around, dancing, or playing. This is an interesting concept as it is the complete juxtaposition of what we expect from our children today. Many of us would worry if our child was not playing or messing around. For a child to be free and to play is not only expected, in most places, it is actively encouraged. Across several of our chapters on urban legends, we have stumbled across stories that are believed by some and dismissed by others. This is an inevitable expectation when delving into stories many consider trustworthy. This tale is no different, as the belief in changelings was once widely accepted as a genuine fear amongst many and is still a cause for concern in some small corners of the world. The belief in these fairy imposters was not limited to the working class individuals of Europe, as at one point, it even made its way into the heavily decorated walls of royalty. In the 1600s, whispers began as rumors spread that King Charles I of England was indeed a changeling. This was seemingly due to his irritable ways and bad-tempered tantrums in childhood, as witnessed by those around him. Our understanding of history suggests that a nurse had claimed that the royal child had been replaced with a changeling. And although the king and queen dismissed the claims, the rumor mill continued to stir amongst the public for years after. There are several reasons why particular children are targeted by the fairy folk, with some claiming that it was to gain a new human servant. Others argued that it was because they craved the affections only a human child could give, although according to some, it was done for no other reason than pure spite. To those that heeded the warnings of the changelings, it was not just the fact that the fairies would steal a child that troubled them, it was also that they would replace them with one of their own. This meant that those unaware of the changes that may come with a changeling would unknowingly raise an imposter whilst their true-born child was held captive by those of the woodlands. Some believed that it was not always as simple as the swapping of children, and that at times, it was in fact the elderly fairies that would take the shape of the stolen child to ensure that they could live their final days in the comforts of a mother's love. On occasions, it had been reported that instead of a child being taken, it was, in fact, the mother who had been kidnapped. This would be a rarity for the fairies, but not entirely unheard of, especially amongst newlyweds and new mothers. There had been reports of new mothers being stolen to look after the fairies' young, whilst youthful adults have been taken away and forced to marry as fairy brides. On these occasions, of an adult kidnapping instead of a child, they would be replaced with an enchanted, inanimate object that would seemingly wither away and die, leaving those around them to believe that their loved ones had passed away. All the while, the real version was out somewhere with the fairies, where they would remain for the rest of their lives. Some believed that the fairies would swap to ensure that their fairy child received a mother's breast milk, a necessity if the fairy child survived. This would also connect to the exchanges of adult mothers, with some claiming that the fairies required a human mother to work as a midwife to ensure that more fairy babies were brought into the world. In Britain, changelings are considered an Irish belief, although, as many of the beliefs between the two nations mix, it is also a legend that has existed amongst the Scottish in the north. In Scandinavia, during the medieval period, it was believed that trolls considered it more respectable to be raised by humans than their kind, leading them to take up any opportunity to swap their children with a human parent. To some, this was only a concern for children yet to be baptized, as once the children had been received into the Catholic faith, the trolls would become powerless in their attempt to abduct them. Where the belief in the changelings came from, is inevitably lost amongst the pages of history that were most likely never written to begin with. Although, several folklorists have their theories as to its origins, and from what I've seen of them, it seems that they hold an element of truth. Like most urban legends, it is probable that it started as one narrative with one purpose, and was later expanded on as it spread through the words of others, occasionally taking on new meanings and elements. Folklorist D.L. Ashleman proposed in his essay, Changelings, that changeling tales illustrate an aspect of family survival in pre-industrial Europe. This proposal focuses on the appetite of the changelings in the tales, due to how often this part of the story is included, no matter the iteration. This makes sense as a play on the anxiety and dread that would come from such a drain on resources, as the parents struggle to provide for their children whilst the changeling takes it all, mirroring the formerly mentioned brood parasites in nature. With this, it seems that the stories of changelings were perhaps a way to justify the infanticide that would occasionally be required to take place. Other folklorists focus on the swap itself, believing that the fairies are mere representations of a fading memory. One of the Europeans that had been forced to flee from whatever invaders had come their way. This theory suggests that the notion of a changeling had very much become a reality, as those in hiding would supposedly exchange their sickly children for healthy ones amongst the invaders. In the medical community, the widely held belief is that at least some of the changeling tales shared over the years were done to explain deformities of their young, including any developmental disabilities and neurodivergent children. This is backed up by the fact that several descriptions of changes over history match what we now understand to be spina bifida, cystic fibrosis, Down syndrome, Williams syndrome, Hunter syndrome, cerebral palsy, and autism spectrum disorder. Some have even gone as far as to suggest that these misinterpretations still happen today, only showing themselves in a different guise. The condition known as regressive autism causes children to develop normally in their early years, only to start showing symptoms of autism as they age. This sudden change could be easily misinterpreted as a completely different child if you were a believer in the folklore. Even in today's world, many out there misunderstand this concept, except now, instead of it being the result of a changeling, it is now a child infected with autism due to vaccines. It is likely that what parents saw as changeling behavior was a natural scientific element yet to be understood. This could also explain why the beliefs often suggested that boys were more likely to be taken than girls, as many of these conditions are considered more likely to occur in males, although that could very well be an issue with diagnostics in women. Changelings today are often used more metaphorically to describe a child that has been swapped, and the notion of fairies has evolved so far from the menacing creatures they were known to be. The world feels so far removed from its tales that it's hard to comprehend that this was such a widely believed prospect. That said, even some of the language used from that time has stayed with us. Today, we often use the term oaf to describe somebody clumsy or a bit stupid. This is derived from the historic English word for a changeling, known as an elf. This is believed to have come from the Old Norse word for an elf, known then as elvach, with its original meaning being elf's child. With so many remnants of this legend still visible in today's world all these years later, it quickly becomes clear how prevalent the notion of child-snatching creatures was worldwide, spreading around Europe and afar. You may wonder just how dark these beliefs led people's actions, and how far people went to rid their lives of these supposed imposters. Unfortunately, the answer to this shows that the urban legend of the changeling remains one of the darkest legends of our history. If you've been listening to my show for some time now, you'll have most likely noticed that there's large gaps between seasons. I often receive comments, messages, and emails from listeners requesting our return, and I do sincerely wish that these gaps could be shorter. You see, when delving into the captivating tales of folklore and urban legends, there's a lot to uncover, and it's extremely important to me that we maintain our standard of accuracy. But this takes time. I create this content and release it for free, and this won't change, but the show does require support. So if you love what we do and you want to be part of Urban Legends' continued expansion, then you can join us over at Patreon by following the link in our show notes. Through Patreon, you can spare as little as £3 a month to support the show and ensure its longevity. As a Patreon supporter, you'll receive each new chapter the Friday before its official release date every week, giving you early access. On top of this, there'll be no ads, and you'll also receive a private podcast feed just for you. You'll also receive a discount code for all of our upcoming merchandise and have access to behind-the-scenes looks into our progress. You'll also have access to our group chat on the Patreon app, where you can talk to myself and others about all things folklore. And to show my gratitude, I'll personally thank each of you at the end of every chapter. The minimum cost of a subscription is less than a cup of coffee. However, I'm running this through an honor system, giving you the opportunity to give more if you wish and are able to do so. So please do give what you can. If you can't do that, or if you want to know what more you can do, then please do leave us a rating on Spotify, a review on Apple Podcast, or anywhere else you listen to our show. The more we grow, the faster these turnarounds will be. You can find out more and join us by following the Patreon link in our show notes and clicking join. So come with us and let's uncover the mysteries of urban legends together. But for now, back to the legend. The belief in changelings seems to have stationed itself hard on the shores of Ireland, becoming a large part of their folklore to this very day, with the opinions amongst some rural areas still going in the older generations that reside there. In Ireland, it was considered dangerous to look at a baby with envious eyes, as this would endanger it, putting it under the fairy's power. This event expanded to overly admiring or envying men or women, especially those able-bodied and beautiful. This includes the aforementioned brides and new mothers, who were also susceptible to being taken away by the creatures. The Isle of Man also had its vast collection of myths and legends regarding fairies, with some including notions very similar to that of the changelings. Around the Anglo-Scottish border, it was believed that elves or fairies lived in elf hills or fairy hills. Here, it was thought that they could spirit away children, taking them back to their world of Elfham. It was said that, more often than not, the baby would be taken away and replaced with a male adult elf, whilst the real baby would be treated well in the elf world, and whilst it would grow up to become one of them, the changeling would, instead, become wary and troublesome. In Germany, the changeling is known as a Wechselbug, Lechselkind, Kielkopf, or Dickkopf, with the latter two hinting at the changelings having huge necks and heads. Here, true parents of the changelings have several iterations, such as a female dwarf, a water spirit, a demonic woman, or even the devil himself. Boginki, also known as the Mamuma, is a Slavic spirit that exchanges babies with Odmiencha in the cradle, very much a changeling once again. The changelings that Boginki had left were said to be noticeably different in appearance, with an abnormally large abdomen, thin arms and legs, a hairy body, long claws, and either an unusually large or tiny head. It seems that the anxieties of a child being snatched from their beds were common throughout European history, with many keen to keep their lineage safe. This notion came with several deterrents along with the legend, such as an inverted coat or open iron scissors left where the child sleeps. It is said that both of these would ward off any changelings that may be lurking nearby. In the Anglo-Scottish region, they believed that to force a suspected changeling to reveal itself, they would either need to be surprised into speech or to make it laugh. The Polish believed that to protect your child from the arrival of Boginki, the mother would need to tie a red ribbon around the baby's wrist, put a red hat on its head, and ensure it stayed out of the moonlight. Other precautions were to avoid cleaning diapers past nightfall and to ensure the mother never turned her head away from the baby as it slept. If Boginki or the Mamuna were to make the exchange, there were considered ways in which you can get your child back. But this is where the darkness of the legend begins to show its ugly face. Almost across the board, the methods required to ensure your baby was returned to you were torturous and cruel. Especially when we remember that the baby they were doing this to was not a changeling, but their child. Here, it is said that the mother would need to take the child to a midden, where she would whip it with a birch stick repeatedly and pour water from an eggshell while shouting, "Take yours, give mine back." This was to continue until the child snatcher would feel sorry for their child returning the human baby so she could take hers back. The Scandinavians believed that if the iron tools left with the baby didn't work, and the trolls succeeded in making the exchange, they could force them to return their child by treating the supposed changeling cruelly. This often entailed whipping the baby, or on some occasions, even putting it inside a heated oven. This would lead to at least one case of a woman being taken to court for killing her child after putting them in the oven due to her belief that it was, in fact, a changeling. In Germany, parents of suspected changelings were expected to do the same. In Ireland and Wales, it is also claimed that a changeling could be surprised into talking, although the Irish also believed that putting the baby into a lit fireplace would cause the changeling to jump up the chimney and return with the human child. It is unknown how many children were beaten, tortured, abused, and murdered due to the strong belief surrounding the changeling legend. But some are documented due to just how recent they appear to have been. In 1826, a 4-year-old boy named Michael Leahy was believed by some in the community of Kerry, Ireland, to be a changeling because he could not speak or stand freely. Anne Roche was an older woman who claimed to have supernatural abilities and healing skills. She would order two others to bathe the misidentified changeling in the River Flesk every morning, which they did for 3 days. Although, on the third morning, he was seemingly held under the water for too long, and they had instead killed him. In 1895, an Irish woman named Bridget Cleary was accused of being a changeling after suffering from what is now understood to be pneumonia. The local storyteller Jack Dunn was first to accuse her of being a changeling, and eventually, several people, including her husband and cousins, murdered her. There is debate about just how much her husband truly believed in this urban legend, with some speculating that he was using it as an excuse to execute a murder. Even so, the killers were only convicted of manslaughter thanks to their use of the fairy defense, a genuine defense used to justify crimes if the perpetrator truly believed the victim was a changeling rather than a human. It may seem strange to us now that someone could be murdered in the name of fairies so recently in our history. It may also be hard to comprehend that some out there still believe in the existence of fairies. Although, even at the time of this murder back in 1895, the world's view on fairies had begun to change. No longer were they the sinister, demonic-like creatures out to hunt our vulnerable children. They were now becoming romanticized and beautiful amongst middle-class Victorian playwrights. With the world speeding into the industrial era, the fairies became something of the past, a remnant of folklore amongst the woodlands of a more nature-driven world. Before long, they had shrunk in their depictions, now small enough to rest on the petal of a flower. Their goblin-like appearance made way for the pretty, delicate, glowing beings that had now sprouted butterfly-like wings. For most, the stories of changelings were now a distant memory, folklore from days gone by, from a more scientifically illiterate age. Little did they know that in the 20th century, the notion of a changeling would return in a very real way. It was the 10th of March, 1928, when Christine Collins gave her son, Walter, some money to go to the cinema. He left in high spirits, excited to go and watch a show, completely unaware that he would never return home again. His disappearance garnered nationwide attention, with all eyes pointed at the Los Angeles Police Department for answers as they followed up on hundreds of leads. With these leads going nowhere, the pressure grew significantly and the negative press grew powerful. With this, there is no doubt about their relief when they finally found Walter Collins in DeKalb, Illinois, 5 months later. Photographs and letters were exchanged between Christine and her son before she eventually paid for the boy to be brought back to Los Angeles. This was a great day for everyone. Christine would have her son back, Walter would be safe, and the police could finally hush the negative backlash that they'd been receiving. Although, when Walter and Christine met, something unexpected and strange happened. Christine claimed that the boy in front of her was not her son. With the pressure to have the case solved getting on top of him, Captain J.J. Jones convinced Christine to try the boy out by taking him home. Once 3 weeks had passed, she returned, reiterating that this boy in her home was not Walter Collins. His dental records did not match, and her friends around her seemingly agreed that it didn't seem to be the same child. Even so, Jones told her she was just a lousy mother trying to bring ridicule to the police. Eventually, he had Christine committed to the psychiatric ward at Los Angeles County Hospital under a Code 12 internment, used to jail or save someone deemed to be complicated or an inconvenience. It was during this incarceration that Jones would finally question the boy, who would confess that he was not Walter Collins and that he had lied. His name was Arthur Hutchins Jr., a runaway from Iowa. He had been picked up by police in Illinois and was asked if he was Walter Collins. At first, he said no, but quickly changed his mind to a yes, deciding to pretend to be Walter so he could get to Hollywood and meet his favorite actor, Tom Mix. It still took 10 days from this admission to finally release Christine, and she eventually filed a lawsuit against the Los Angeles Police Department, where she was awarded $10,800 to be paid by Jones himself, although he never paid a penny to her. The story turned even more tragic when, in 1929, serial killer Gordon Stewart Northcott was found guilty of abducting, assaulting, and killing three young boys in what became known as the Wineville Chicken Coop murders. His mother, Sarah Louise Northcott, confessed that she had participated in the murder of the missing boy, Walter Collins, amongst her son's victims. However, neither Northcott was ever officially charged with Walter's murder. That said, Christine never gave up hope on the survival of her missing son, with Northcott's story of Walter's murder consistently changing. It was when he could not recall Walter's eye color, clothing, or even meeting the boy that the desperate mother felt a dash of hope to grasp hold of, which she did as she continued to look for her son until the day that she died on December the 8th, 1964. Whilst growing up, most people have imagined what it would be like to be a parent at least once. They have imagined the life they may lead and just how they would raise a child. Even those who do not want kids have opinions on how a kid should or shouldn't be raised. With this in mind, it's easier to understand just how much it would shake our world if the reality of that child did not fit that narrative. It is easy to point out how silly it is to expect it to be just as we imagined. It is easy to judge those who would rather blame food, vaccines, or fairy creatures for the situation they've been put inside. But still, we can at least try and empathize with why they struggle with that acceptance. Often, even with the struggles that come with it, parents will say that they would not change their child for the world, as that is who they are. The fact that the world is becoming so much more understanding and inclusive of neurodivergent people worldwide is beautiful, and tales like The Changeling emphasize just how important this is. We should consider ourselves lucky that we are now in a time where we can live life like never before. As for some, life back then would have been near impossible. For hundreds of years, every generation has considered the next to be lazy, weak, and stupid compared to ours. Yet every generation continues to push our society forward, for better or worse. We demonize the young, just as our elders demonized us. We fall into the same traps as every generation before us, becoming things we swore we never would. With this, and the amount of pain our beliefs in the changelings cause the young, it becomes a little bit clearer that whilst we troubled ourselves with fears of fairies and trolls, it turns out that the real danger to our children is, and always has been, ourselves.
Urban Legends is researched, written, and produced by Luke Mordew. Original score by Billy Jupp, with additional sounds from storyblocks.com. If you like what you heard and want to hear more, click subscribe on your chosen podcast provider and delve into the mysteries of our previous and future chapters. To find more, including merchandise, video content, images, and more, visit urbanlegendsfolklore.com. If you have more information or a correction on something mentioned in this chapter, please get in touch through our website. We aim to ensure that all information provided is accurate and up to date, and this remains a top priority. If you want to support the show, receive early access, and have more of a say in what we do, then become a patron by clicking the link in our show notes. For these chapters in video format, simply search Urban Legends Folklore on YouTube. Follow us on TikTok, Instagram, and Threads, and join our Facebook group by searching Urban Legends Folklore.